trying hard to stay together and make a stand. While the rows and rows of houses come creeping up on the land, where the cattle graze and an old gray barn still stands. Are there any more real cowboys in this land? This land.
Give me the wag. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor, 1 week of their life, 1 week?
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago, and a year ago I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good, and I like it when we had our own bed, different, and when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth, who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. It is indeed the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program. And you are indeed listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Put a pause in that. All right. So this is the Without a Roof radio program. This is Josh Indar here subbing in for Guillermo Mash, who is on a family trip, and we wish him well. I haven't done this show before, so hopefully it'll come out okay. I have a guest with me, and...
Hello?
Mic one.
Hi. Oh, hey, there we go.
There it is.
There's a couple mics up here.
Yeah. And that one is, well, I should have known it was mic one. Okay, so here we have Aaron Farrell, who works at the 6th Street Center for Youth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's your usual thing that you do there?
Well, I work there as a case manager, and I help youth that are homeless or at risk of being homeless. And the help that I provide is mainly helping with independent living skills, mm-hmm. and getting things done, getting connected to services, resumes, just all that sort of day-to-day stuff that is really important, but, you know, tends to get overlooked in the process of people trying to meet their goals and become successful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really tough to do for any teen. I know I have a teenager who is trying to get a job, and it's hard for him. He lives with me, and I help him all the time. But yeah. Of course, if you're just out in the streets or wherever you're living and just trying to survive every day, all that stuff just becomes 20 times harder.
Yeah, imagine going to the DMV for the first time by yourself and you're mm-hmm. like 15.
Yeah. Line do I stand in? I don't have any money. I don't have this. I don't have that. And then it's very mm-hmm. discouraging for a youth.
That's where I come in, and I try to be a bit of assistance and a helping hand.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And you've got a special program going on there right now that's like a summertime thing, kind of an enrichment type activity.
Yeah. I know that this was an idea that came up before I was there, but I kind of followed through with it, and it was I just noticed since I've been there at 6th Street, and I've been there about a year, that a lot of the youth that come in are extremely musically talented.
Yeah.
And a lot of them just either hop on a guitar or hop on a drum or the piano and just play music all day. And there's at least, like, for at least a couple hours throughout the day, you hear some kind of music going on. And I'm a musician myself, and I just began to realize that a lot of the youth there that have so much talent just need a bit of extra help in cultivating that.
Yeah.
And just having somebody there to push them and encourage them, because I find art and creativity and music to be very important for personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That's where I came up with the idea to do 6th Street Records. And the goal is to get youth in front of a microphone and just, like, have fun and record. And ultimately, I'd like to put together a mixtape of all the youth that are musically inclined, whether they're extremely talented or whether they're just extremely enthusiastic.
Yeah,
because I feel like both are equal.
Yeah, and it really runs the gamut. I know what you're saying. When you go to 6th Street, you almost always hear someone playing something in the background, whether it's the piano, and I've heard some just beautiful singers there, and just some really talented youth. And I'm like, wow, you know, I was really hoping that this would happen sooner or later there, because there is a lot of talent, and they have a lot of things to say. There's a lot of stuff that they, you know, that people don't really understand about homeless youth, and I feel like they really get to it in some of the songs that they recorded.
Yeah, and a really good example of that is Writing for Donuts, the program that you do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about all the things that that the youth have to say that people might not know about or be aware of, like what's going on in their community.
Mm-hmm.
Writing for Donuts, those little pamphlets are really, like, they have such good writing. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is lyrics. A lot of it. I have a lot of youth come in, and they're either scrawling it down then, or they come in with something that they've been working on for a couple days, and they're songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, it does my heart good to know that, like, they're being creative one way or another, because I feel like that's so important.
So important. Well, did you bring anything to play for us?
I do have one song. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I would like to put together, like I said, a complete mixtape. I've only had a couple of participants so far.
Mm-hmm.
So before the project is completed, I'd like to have a couple of more sessions.
Yeah.
And then maybe in the future I could come onto the show and sort of do a premiere for everybody to hear, and which would be great. So
maybe bring some of the youth with you and see what they have to say.
Have
about
like
it.
A little listening party here. Yeah. That'd be really cool.
That'd be awesome.
Good idea. Well, I do have one song, and I can't reveal a person's name.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really, she didn't, there was no title that was given to me, so I guess I can just play it as
let's see how it goes. Do you have it all queued up?
Be just one moment.
Okay, good. That gives me a chance to say that the Without a Roof program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Chico News and Review, providing Northern California with news, commentary, and entertainment. The Chico News and Review is available for free every Thursday at over 600 locations throughout Butte, Glen, and Tehama counties. They can also be found online at newsreview.com. How we doing?
We're all set.
Okay, we're ready to go. Hit play and let's see what this sounds like.
right. That was amazing.
Yeah.
That's, if you're just tuning in, this is in the background music by Homeless Youth that's being recorded at the Sixth Street Center for Youth with our guest, Aaron Farrell.
Hey.
And so you said that girl's about 20? Young woman?
Yeah, I believe. I believe so. I can't remember her age. But, yeah, she came in with a full page of lyrics and was just, like, totally prepared and knew exactly what she wanted to say. And that was really exciting because most people just want to come in and wing it and have fun, which is great, which mm-hmm. I enjoy the improvisation mm-hmm. that goes on with that. But it was interesting to see somebody come in with a plan, and she had something very specific for that track.
I always find it just really humbling and amazing experience to support youth when they're making art and when they're putting themselves out there being vulnerable like that. I just get very emotional about it. I think it's a really amazing experience, and it's really cool that you're doing that.
Thank you. I'm excited to see where it goes. It was just one session and we got so much out of it, and honestly, that I feel like the people that came in to record, there were only three, but that is honestly maybe less than 25% or 20% of what the potential is yeah. for people to come in and record music. And they come from all walks of life and all genres.
Yeah, they do.
And it'll be really cool if I get everybody together to do it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're looking forward to that, and thanks, Aaron, for coming by today.
Thank you, Josh, for having me on. This yep. is awesome.
Yeah, and so whenever that gets completed, then, like you said, listening party.
For sure.
Sure.
It's going to be sweet.
Right here. Okay, thanks a lot. We gotta move on. We got a short show, or it's not short, but bear with me here. I've never done this show before. Is that going to work?
Guillermo Mash here, host of the Without a Roof radio program, which kicks off a trifecta of KZFR Wednesday public affairs programming, airing from 5 to 5:30.
Each week we explore poverty, the worst form of violence, focusing on human beings without a roof. Thanks for listening, and if you have a roof, be grateful. Non-Human Radio, hosted by Jeannie Fazzino, talks all things animal rights, bringing you the latest news and interviews with local activists.
Plus book, film, and restaurant reviews and deep discussions of the benefits of veganism.
For humans and non-humans alike, Wednesdays from 5:30 till 6 p.m. The Real Issue, hosted by Sue Hildebrand, digs into topics ranging from elections to environmental protection.
From social justice to economic justice, from the local to the global.
We cover the political part of everything. Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Thanks for listening to
Beat the Power Radio.
Good evening, KZFR. You're listening to the Without a Roof radio program. My name is Jess Candela, and I'm the facilitator of the Butte County Youth Advisory Council. Today on our program, we have an interview with Susan Roll. Susan is an associate professor of social work at Chico State and researches in the fields of homelessness, poverty, and civic engagement. Let's welcome Susan to our show.
Thanks for inviting me, Jess.
So can you give us an overview about what social work is and kind of why you decided to be a social worker?
Oh, that's a good question, Jess. So social workers work in many, many different places, and so sometimes our profession seems so broad that people have trouble understanding it, but generally we are folks that think about individuals in their environment. So, for example, we might work with young people in schools. We might work with older adults in assisted living facilities. We might work in hospitals. We might work in community-based organizations. And we're always paying attention to how social issues not only affect individuals and families, but how there's a larger contextual connection, of course, to policies and economics. Mm-hmm. And so we're working both on a macro level and a micro level to try to produce change.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so your work on these social issues as a social worker has kind of centered on poverty and homelessness most recently. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So I was a social worker for about 10 years before I came back to be a professor. So I had the opportunity to see the effects of poverty on individuals and families. And really, after a while of working with individuals and families that are struggling in policy, it's difficult not to want to get involved, in poverty, in policy change that would actually ameliorate some of these problems, which is really quintessentially social work, really. We talk about how, yeah, you have to be doing both the work with individuals, but also pushing the larger change. So that's why I went back to school to become a professor of social work, so that I could start to make some of those broader changes. So the majority of my work over the last year has been around childcare policy. There's an interesting phenomenon that happens with families who are accessing public benefits, and we often refer to it as a benefits cliff or a cliff effect. So the example of what happens with families who are accessing the childcare voucher, which is basically a voucher program that allows families to get free or reduced childcare for their families if they qualify under a certain guideline for income. So let's say, for example, that you were a single mom and you were making not a lot of money, maybe $11 or $12 an hour, and you had a couple kids. And of course, we know that you couldn't afford childcare at market rate. So here in Butte County, you would go to Valley Oak Children's Services and you would sign up with your paperwork and you'd show them your paycheck stubs. And they would say, okay, Jess, you qualify. And you would get a voucher and you would be able to bring your children to any childcare facility in Butte County that takes the voucher. And let's say you did that and everything's going fine and your children are happy and healthy and you're getting to work and you're doing a good job. And one day you're doing such a good job that your boss comes to you and says, Jess, I'm going to give you a raise. You're doing such a good job. But you, being the smart mom that you are, realize that if you take the raise, you're going to get bumped off your childcare benefits, and likely your raise is not enough to be able to cover the loss in benefits. So we call that a benefit cliff. And we know that childcare is really the most expensive benefit to lose. So this puts a lot of families in a really precarious situation because they have to decide between advancing in a job or remaining on the benefits. And frankly, the smart ones remain on the benefit because you lose money otherwise. And it has a lot of long-term repercussions. This is mostly women that face this benefits cliff. And things like, you know, then they don't progress in their wages. So let's say this scenario, let's play this out. You remained in your $11 or $12 an hour job. And 5 or 10 years from now, when your kids are in school, you don't need the child care benefit anymore. So you go to apply for a job that maybe might pay quite a bit more, but your resume doesn't look very good because you've only been making 11 or 12 bucks. So really, you're a $20 employee by that point, but you can't make that leap then into higher employment.
Absolutely.
It also has effects on your Social Security benefits. It has effects on all kinds of things. So it's a real policy conundrum. So that's been a lot of my research has been around trying to figure out how do we change policies. So, for example, maybe you would incrementally lose that benefit as opposed to being abruptly cut off. And that's something that luckily here in California, the Legislative Women's Caucus has really prioritized low-income child care here in the state of California. And I expect that in the next few years, we're going to see some substantial changes that will alleviate some of these policy problems so that families actually can move out of poverty. And that's exciting.
Definitely. Really great work that you're doing.
Thanks.
And on the other hand of that, if families are not able to get out of poverty, they might go into homelessness. And you've done some more research about homelessness. So can you tell us a little about that?
Exactly. Yeah. So, of course, here in Chico, we've been talking a lot about homelessness. And it's a growing concern in a lot of cities, as people are probably aware, in San Francisco and Seattle and Portland. Cities are really struggling with what do we do with all these folks that have dropped into homelessness, mainly, you know, as a consequence of the recession and now a really tight housing market that people really can't get into any type of housing because we don't have affordable housing in most of these communities. So one approach that cities have been taking is really a policy approach through public safety. So what we've done here in Chico is increase the penalties for being homeless. So, for example, in December of 2013, we passed a local ordinance, as you're aware of, called the Sit and Lie Ordinance. So, and we passed some other ordinances having to do with not being able to store your belongings in a public waterway. So really, these are mechanisms that the city is using to try to reduce homelessness. So if we criminalize homelessness, then perhaps this will alleviate the burden on local businesses. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Jess, what the research has borne out is that, in fact, while we don't give a lot of tickets for those ordinances, not a lot of sit-and-lie tickets have been issued. Really, police tend to use those more as warnings. Mm-hmm. There's been a general increase in the policing of the homeless population. So whereas law enforcement might arrest, in any given month, their arrests maybe were 20% folks that were not in housing, now it's more like 30 and 40% folks that aren't in housing. So there's been quite an increase in the policing of folks who are homeless. Mm-hmm. And we know that folks who are homeless can't afford often the court fees and things that are then involved in an arrest. So they tend to cycle in and out of the criminal justice system. And I know that the Chico police don't want to be, you know, having that cycle go on. None of us do. We understand that it's really not an effective way of dealing with the problem. So it's looking like that public safety approach to homelessness is probably not our best solution for moving forward. But I will credit the Chico police with really trying to engage with our local behavioral health agencies and other resource providers to try to find better solutions. The policing of the homeless is certainly costing the city a substantial amount of money, a lot more than we had originally predicted in the grand jury report. We proved in this study that it's really costing quite a bit more. And if we could shift those dollars into a different place or move those resources, we could perhaps be providing people with more supportive services, more low-income housing, those kinds of things. I think that's really what the community wants, is real long-term solutions, and I think that we are ready now in this community to start looking at those solutions.
Definitely. I mean, as you spoke about, we have a lot of resources and we have people working mm-hmm. on these issues of poverty and homelessness. We just need to somehow coordinate these efforts and really get them out to people who need them the most.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you want to read more about Susan's work on poverty, check out the publication Chico State Today and its feature on Susan's poverty scholar work. And secondly, you were recently named the Director of Civic Engagement for mm-hmm. Chico State, so congratulations for
that.
Thank you. Awesome. And so what is civic engagement and why is it important in our community?
So really, when we're talking about civic engagement on a college campus, I think we're thinking about how do we use these brilliant resources that we have on this campus, which are faculty, staff, and students that are studying all these neat things, to bear on local problems and local issues. So, for example, how are engineering students connecting what they're learning in the classroom with problems at the Oroville Dam? Or how are political science students looking at how policies affect how we do sustainability measures in our city? Those kinds of things. So we really want students to be coming to college and seeing how what they're learning has real-world application.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do in civic engagement is really try to highlight the work that is already going on. Lots of classrooms on campus already use real-world problem-solving so that students get that connection. And also just trying to get more and more faculty engaged in bringing real-world problems to the classroom and helping students see how their skills are bringing to bear on that. So we've got so many good things going on. For example, several students, particularly in geography and sustainability classes, have been working on South Campus issues. We've got folks working in the parks. We've got lots of people working on sustainability issues. So really just trying to support faculty to be doing what we call community-based scholarship. So not only are we using this for teaching, but we're using it for research to really inform how we're doing local problem solving, what's working, what's not working, those kinds of things. So it's pretty exciting work, mm-hmm. and really it's been met with great reception. Lots of folks on this campus are interested in that and appreciate that that's really the direction that higher ed needs to be going. So we're just trying to support folks to be doing that kind of work.
Absolutely. And to come full circle, how does community and civic engagement then affect poverty and homelessness? How do those two connect?
Yeah, great question. Well, we know that the students who are here at Chico State are the problem solvers of today and tomorrow. So the more that we can help students gain skills in research and how do you get involved in changing local policies and solving local problems, then our future, I think, looks quite a bit brighter when we think about actually enacting that in our community.
Absolutely. So recently, as you know, in February 2017, we started the Butte County Youth Advisory Council.
Congratulations, by the way. That's a great initiative.
Thank you. And so we're focusing on empowerment, leadership, and well-being skills. And our council members are, of course, have experienced homelessness, mm-hmm. poverty, incarceration, or foster care. And so from your perspective, working with students at Chico State and the community, why are youth-led initiatives like this important in our community?
Yeah. I think most importantly is that we need to be informed about locals' problems by people who have experienced local problems. So I am a middle-class white woman, Jess. I've never experienced homelessness. I've never been on public benefits. So it's rather arrogant if I were to go out and think I'm going to solve problems around that without really being informed by the community who it's affecting. Oftentimes we call that participatory action research, when you involve folks who are experiencing a problem in the problem solving. And I think this youth-led initiative is just a